Can we say that the borrower's possessions, right, can be subject to a lien? Okay? Now, obviously, let's say that if, all right, I'll take an arbitrary date, okay? Let's say that on the 10th of Adar, okay, so-and-so borrowed money from the other guy, right? Chaim borrowed from Yankel, okay? So, can Yankel collect on property that Chaim acquired prior to the date of the loan? The answer is no, he cannot. On the other hand, he can collect on anything that was purchased subsequently. He gave him the money, and then the guy went out and he bought. So on that, he could collect. Okay? Now, what would happen if the lender was a wise guy, and instead of putting down the date, the 10th day of Adar, he put down that it was lent on the 5th day of Adar. Okay? Then in that particular case, he would not be allowed to collect on anything that Chaim got between the 5th and the 10th, because that was Chaim's. It was not taken, let's say, from the money that was lent to him in order to do whatever what it was in order to improve his economic betterment. Okay? So that, therefore, they made a rule that if somebody predates the note, then in that case, that note is invalid. Possible. Okay? But on the other hand, let's say that he put down not the 10th day of Adar, but he decided to put down the 15th day of Adar. That's a perfectly valid note, because he is actually penalizing himself. You understand? The lender is doing it, he's penalizing himself. So in that particular case, that note is valid. Okay? So that's what the Mishnah is saying over here. That's what they're quoting. Namely, that story of Abdomen. Notes, promissory notes, you know, that are predated are possible, they're invalid, but Hamul Chorin Kisherim. But those that are dated later are kosher. And so therefore, of course, applying it to, let's say, with the years of a king, as we said, right? How he dated it is going to affect whether he could collect or not collect, you know, the mortgage property. Okay? Yeah. Yes. If they didn't write it down, then it was expected that 30 days would be the ordinary one. But they could make it 60 days or 90 days, whatever they want. The minimum was, and the loan was, the minimum was for 30 days. Okay? That was a minimum. And even if they didn't write it specifically, a person could expect to be repaid 30 days after. Okay? But if the agreement was that the loan would be valid, you know, for 60 days he didn't have to pay, or for 90 days, or for a year, or whatever it may be, then it went on the terms of what you wrote down in the note.
And the predating would go apply to a specified period of time?
The predating would apply to anything prior to the actual date that the transaction took place. Well, yeah, I see what your point is. Yeah, theoretically you might say that, but here we're not concerned with that. We are more concerned with the fact that the lender should not seize property belonging to the borrower, which legally belonged to the borrower. That's the point.
Well, the predated note, it wasn't valid until the date of the loan.
Right. Matter of fact, I mean, if it says pasulin, invalid, then, you know, the court could throw out the whole deal. You understand? Throw it out. And then they would have to try to adjudicate, I mean, find out, you know, when actually did it take place and so on, and in what circumstances. Yes. Right. Still has to pay back. Look, you can't be a goddess, you understand? You shouldn't be a goddess. You have a moral responsibility to pay back.
Yeah, the Jubilee year came, everything was, was it just the Jubilee or the seventh year as well? No, just the Jubilee.
Okay, no, no, no. Seventh year also. Seventh year was also a year of Shemitah. Shemitah means not only, it wasn't only the fact.
The land, that it was also the loans.
It implied, yes, it implied the loans.
Yes, so, all right, so what happened, and the Torah specifically enjoins you not to refuse.
That is correct. Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
We'll get there.
Right.
I mean,
you ask a very important question. Right. Yeah. Very, really. Because, you know, then the question is, you know, maybe people will refuse to lend if the time is too close to the
street,
because they figure, right, it's going to be automatically wiped out, and then they won't see their money back.
Right.
Yeah. So that, of course, they deal with in other areas. Face, you know, the famous enactment of Hillel was the Prusbol, whereby the court itself assumed the responsibility of the loan,
and then
it would collect. You know.
Everything was valued according to days, the time remaining.
That's the cost, the value of the item, but not the, the issue itself.
All right, let's continue right now. Okay, so we've established that much so far. Now, Tana Rabba.
Yeah. Land, etc.
Yeah. Okay, Tana Rabba. Our sages taught the following. Whenever you have Tana Rabba, normally they are quoting a Baraisa someplace else, okay? It says, Melech Shoma B'Yesem Matisha B'Yad. If a king ascended the throne, on the 29th day of Adar, which of course is the last day in the month of Adar, right? Kevan Shigia Echa bin Nisan, as soon as the first day of Nisan arrived, also they shana, then it counts as one full year for him. The Yim Lawamad, Elabi Echa bin Nisan, but let's say he only ascended the throne on the first day of Nisan, then in that case, Ein Monin Lo Shana Ashigia Nisan Achir. Then they don't count as a year until the following Nisan. Okay? So Amamar, so one of the sages said, Melech Shoma B'Yesem Tisha B'Yador, a king who ascended the throne on the 29th day of Adar, Kevan Shigia Echad B'Nisan Osele Shana, inasmuch as we said that as soon as the first day of Nisan comes, that automatically counts as one full year for him. So he says, "Oh, Kamash Malon." Then this teaches us. He says, "The Nisan Rosh Hashanah Limlochim." This teaches us then that Nisan is actually the first day of the year, as far as kings are concerned. Right? That's one teaching. And then another teaching is B'Yom Echad B'Shana Choshev Shana, and one day in the year is already considered as if it were a complete year. Of course, he's referring to that statement that said if he became king on the 29th day of Adar, right? The next day already is the beginning of a new year for him. Of course, it's the first day of Nisan, right? So it's right. So observing one day
it's
like a whole year, right? It's like a whole year, right?
The practical aspect of that is that if on the day that he became king, on the 29th day of Adar,
right,
and he made an edict, affecting his kingdom,
right,
would say he made this in the first year of his reign.
That is correct. Absolutely right.
If you want to taste this nut,
and
begin to count how long things took, you'll get this far.
Suppose he did it on the third, he took his throne on the 29th, and he made an edict on the third day of Nisan.
In the second year.
That would be in the second year.
That would be the second year, exactly. Right, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So they quoted with this Baraisa that we said, and they say, Pshita, isn't that obvious? We've already said that. Well, the minute it says Pshita, it's obvious. It's followed usually by Leut Smricha. No, we need it for a specific instance where it doesn't follow that rule. Namely, what is the instance? They say, the imnu aleho, ale, probably ale would be better to read it over here, me ador. In other words, this, the case that we had here is slightly different. not that he actually ascended the throne in Adar, but simply that the notables of the kingdom decided that he should become the king, okay? It was, let's say, the 29th of Adar that they had an assembly, an election, whatever you want to call it, right? And they decided that he should be king. And, right? So, the Gemara says, Mahu the same. What if you argue that, what? Nimnu lei tartan shnin? Maybe we should count 2 years for him. In other words, since they decided to elect him king in Adar, then that should count as 1 year, and then the first of Nisan will count as the second year. Give him the same benefit of the doubt that we said before, that if the king actually ascended the throne, right, he became Melech on the 29th of Adar, then the next day count somebody as the beginning of the second year. Yeah? So, therefore, the Gemara says, Kamashpalan. Therefore, this teaches us that not so. There's a difference between having an assembly saying that this man would be a good king actually, as compared to actually ascending the throne and becoming king. Right.
It's like the November election and the January 1st.
Yeah, right, right. It's similar to it. Right. Right. Yeah.
If you're elected, you're elected for 4 years. And if you're appointed in Adar,
you could be unappointed.
No. You get only 3 years. You get 3 years in one day.
Yeah. Okay. Tana Rabban. Another teaching that's quoted, okay, says, Meis b'Adar. Let's say the king died in Adar, right? V'yomad acher tachtov b'Adar. And another king arose, or ascended the throne, if you wish, in his place in Adar, right? Then monin shana lezeh ulezeh. Then in that case, they count a year both for the king who died and also for the king who has now ascended the throne in Adar. Okay? For the king who died, naturally, that would be the, let's say, the 30th year of his reign, or the 25th year of his reign, whatever it may be, that's obvious, right? Yeah, because it belongs to the previous year, right? And at the same time, since he ascended the throne, now he became the king, and it was still Adar, so therefore, the next day, when it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so automatically it counts at the beginning of the second year of his reign. All right. Now, what happens if Meis ben Nisan, let's say the old king died in Nisan, right? The Yomad Achet Tachto ben Nisan, and his successor then became king in Nisan, then Monin Shana Lezeh, Ulezeh, then they count the year for this one and that one. Namely, let's say it would be the 31st year of the one who died, and it's only the first year of the new one, because he didn't become king until it was Nisan, and Nisan went to the beginning of the new year for him. All right? Now, what happened if Meis be'Adar, right? The Omad Acher Tachto be'Nisan, right? Let's say, one died in Adar, right? The king died in Adar. And another one ascended the throne in his place in Nisan, all right? Not in Adar, but he first became the ruler in Nisan. You understand? Then in that case, Monin Rishon El Rishon, Ushni El Hasheni, then the first year is still counted for the old king, but the new year, the second year, in other words, the new king, since he only began reigning when in Nisan, then that counts as the first year for him, for his reign, and that's it, not the second year. Okay? Omar, one of the authorities said, Meis be'Adar, he died in Adar, the Omad Acher Tachtov, right, and another one took his place, right, in Adar, became king in Adar, Monin Shana Lezeh Lezeh, right, and we count the year for both of them, right? In other words, year for the old king, year for the new king. Pshita, isn't it obvious? So they say, no, it's not so obvious, because Mahu de Tema, what if you should argue as follows? Shatol of a tray, le meninun, that we cannot count the same year for two different people. Let's say that that's your argument. So how could we say that it's a year for this one and a year for another one? No. So kamash malon, therefore, we learn that the attacker, you are permitted to do that. This is the ruling, that you do it. Okay?
So,
yes?
What practical applications does it have?
Okay.
So they carry the New Year.
Very good. First of all, they want to determine the fact, because they're not finished yet arguing about, is it that obvious, you know, that a king's year begins with the first day of Nisan. So they're going to keep on adducing, you know, evidence and all these various statements, these derises and so on and so forth, in order to show that in every example that we have, when does a king's reign begin? That is, when do we begin, that is, counting a year for a king? Is it from the day? Right? Yeah, okay. So therefore we say that automatically we say that when the first day of Nisan arrives, that's the beginning of another year in the reign. Okay. Good. But remember, this also is going to affect what we started with. Maybe we were talking about storos, right? Notes. How you date it. If you date it in the year of King Chaim, or do you date it in the year of King Yaakov?
You
understand?
No,
but that's the point. That's how they, but they dated it that way. You understand? So let's say that they said, okay.
The calendar year was reckoned by the king's reign.
Right. We said that. Yeah, we said in order to show shalom malchus, right? To show honor to the kingdom, that, you know, it should be prosperous and so on, so we show, right? Yeah. If you're talking about today, that's already a different story. We don't use that system of counting anymore. All right. But remember, right, we have a principle with this. I think I'll call it halt tonight because my throat is beginning to say bye-bye to me. We have a principle of Drosh v'Kabel Tzachar. Drosh means search out the Torah, study it, and so on, and receive the reward for it. Even if something has no practical application today, but nevertheless, it's important for us to understand the psychology, the teachings, what went on, what were they thinking of, and everything else, because to us, it's holy writings. So, Drosh v'Kabel Tzachar, come together, we learn. We find ourselves in a different realm all of a sudden. We're no longer in the realm of TV and computers and things like that. In fact, we're living with our ancestors thousands of years ago, see how they behaved, see how they thought, and so on and so forth. So that this is the idea.
And nothing has changed.
Right.
Nothing has changed.
Right. Can I just... Right. Tonight is the 9th of June. Thank you. Side fleet, as we say in French.
1999.
And it's 1999. We are now on Rosh Hashanah, Taf Beis, Amud Beis. In other words, the second side of the first page. But, you know, every Gemara begins with a Beis. It never begins with an Aleph. The real reason, in my opinion, is simply because the printers, when they printed it, you know, they had a title for it. And so, therefore, they began the text on the second one. But, you know, that's not the official reason.
What's the official reason?
Kabbalist?
No,
it's
not.
There's two worlds, the upper world and the lower world, so they have Aleph
Beis. Oh, well, that's another story. No. The popular joke about why does every Gemara begin with the Beis is because nobody really knows everything from Aleph on. We only know some of it. In other words, our mind cannot really be so infinite that we can grasp every single thing, and so therefore we start at with the Beis, which already indicates that there is a gap in the amount of things that we can actually learn. Of course, there have been people, you know, who've gone through the entire Talmud, and not only the entire Babli, which we have over here, they've gone through the Rishonim, they've gone through everything else. I mean, a person like Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, for example, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein obviously learned that, and there are many other Geonim also, you know, covered every single thing. They did it by virtue of devoting every day, maybe 18 hours a day to study, and reviewing and going over it again and so on and so forth. And they took only a few hours out, you know, for mundane things, right? A little sleep, a little eating and so on, okay? So they were able to do it. All right, at any rate, let me just summarize briefly some of the things that we had. The Mishnah, if you remember, began by speaking about the fact that there are actually four different times during the year that were called Rosh Hashanah, okay? But each was for a different purpose. We started, of course, with Rosh Hashanah, the first of Nisan being a Rosh Hashanah, and we said that that is, you know, for kings and for festivals and so on. And then we came to the first of Elul, which is the time for Maaseh Behemah, according to one opinion. In other words, the tithing that you have to give. Remember, I explained that when you have newborn, either calves or little lambs and things like that, then in that particular case, the tenth one is sacred. So how did they do it? They ran them through, you know, like a corral with a narrow exit, and then they would mark with a rod dipped in paint, you know, with red paint on it, so that they would know that that happens to be the tenth animal, and that was eventually taken to Shalayim and was eaten by the people, by the family, who brought it as a sacrifice.
Jacob did when he hunted for Laban,
Right.
Did he do the same way?
Yeah, well, it doesn't say that he took Bisera, but he did promise to the Rebbeinu Shalom that he would give Bisera, that he would give a tenth of whatever he possessed. It's correct that he did say, okay? But at any rate, the purpose of that, if you remember, is the fact that whatever is from the old year belongs to the old year. But as the first of Elul, according to the Tana, according to the teacher and the Mishnah who taught that, then anything after that would be already for the new year. Cannot, and we learned that you cannot give Miser from one year for another. It has to be in each in a separate year, okay? And then, according to another opinion, actually the first of Nisan, the first of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah, not only for that, but for many other things having to deal with planting and things like that. Again, I mean, to know such things as, for example, Orla, when, and this and that. But at any rate, Maiswis and things like that. But of course, it's also Rosh Hashanah for human beings as well. And of course, that will come to as time goes on. And then finally, there was one more Rosh Hashanah, and that is for trees, if you remember. And that, according to Beis Shammai, was the first of Shabbat. Whereas according to Basil, it was the 15th of Shemot. Okay. Then when the Gemara began to analyze the text, they started with the first statement about the first of Nisan is, you know, Rosh Hashanah for kings. And they wanted to know what is the practical application of that. So we learned that it's in reference to the dating of Storos. In other words, official records that had to be notarized and so on, so that they dated it by the year of the king, right? And therefore, we learned the basic principle that shtori cho mukdamit, that if a person owes money to somebody else, right, if it is predated, then in that case it's no good, because the person who has lent the money can go and collect, and he's not entitled to collect anything prior to the date in which actually the loan is made. Whereas Muharon, if he feels you know, good natured, he wants to post-date it, that's perfectly okay, because he's losing out, you know, until the date, until, so anything from the actual time of the transaction until the date on the star itself, you know, he couldn't touch either, you see. So that already was a benefit that he himself could confer. Okay. And then we now come back again to the business of kings. And we determined, if you remember last time, that the first of Nisan marks the beginning of a new year in the reign of kings, right? And so therefore we came to the problem of what if a king died, for example, let's say during the month of Adar or any time prior to that, and a king took ascended the throne still in the month of Adar, right? Then what happened when Rosh Chodesh Nisan came? So we said at that particular point, what has gone before counts as a full year. Even though he only reigned a short time, but nevertheless, it counts as a full year, okay? Whereas if he first began reigning in Nisan, then of course in that particular case, that would be the first year of his reign, okay? So this is pretty much where we left it last time. And we are on the second page of the handout that I gave you right now, which happens to be Daf Beis, Omid Beis, okay? Right? And the last thing that we studied over there, okay? Yeah, I'll just review a couple of lines over there, okay? Yeah. Okay, I'll start right now when I'll review a little bit of what we had, and then we'll continue with new material that we didn't have. Okay, we'll start at the end of the fifth line from the top. Okay, you see the abbreviation over there, Taf Resh, right? Okay, that stands for Tana Rabbana. Tana Rabbana means always that it's a baraisa that our sages taught us. And they are quoting it at this particular point. Okay. It happens to come from Tosefta, which is a great collection of material that date to the time of the Mishnah, but they were never officially included in the canon of the Mishnah. And so when the rabbis discuss trying to understand the Mishnah, they often quote from the Tosefta and from other statements that never made it. So we call them Baraisas, okay? It says over there, Meis B'Adar, right? If the king died in the month of Adar, the Yomar Achet Hafta B'Adar, and the new king then ascended the throne in his place in Adar, then in that case we said what? Monin Shona Lezeh Lezeh, right? Then in that case we count the year for both kings. In other words, it would be, well, let's say, the 12th year of King A who died, and at the same time it counts as year one for King B, okay? Meis B'Nisan. Now, what if the king, however, died in the month of Nisan? The Yomet Achet Hakta B'Nisan, and the new king ascended to the throne in Nisan. Then Monin Shona Lezeh Lezeh. Then in that case, Nisan counts as a year for the departed king, because of the fact what? He did die during the month of Nisan, which was the new year, right? So that would count for him. And at the same time, it counts as the first year for the new king who has ascended the throne. Okay? Meis B'Adar Yomet Achet Hachtov B'Nisan. One of the king died in Adar, but his successor didn't ascend the throne until when? Until the month of Nisan, right? Then in that case, Monin Rishonah L'Rishonah Shtu Yelashayi. Then in that case, we count the first one, meaning the month of Adar only goes for whom? For the first king. Whereas the second month, right, in other words, the month of Nisan, that goes for the second, the new king. Omamar, the sage said, Meis B'Adar V'Yomet Achet Hachto B'Adar. Okay, he's reviewing this idea again, and only wants to analyze a little bit further. So he says, if the king died in Adar, and his successor ascended the throne in Adar, then we already said, what? Monin Shana Lezeh Lezeh, right? That we count the year both for the previous king, and also we count it as a new year for the new king, right? So Pshita, wouldn't that be obvious? I mean, based upon what we've already said until now, so what is wrong with the picture? So he says, Mahu d'tema, what if you should argue as follows? Shato levetre lo meninun, that it's not right to count the same year for two different people. So kamash malon, therefore, we learn from the discussion that in reality it's perfectly okay to do so, okay? That you can count one year for the first king and the same year also for the second king. Then we quoted the next part of the statement, Meis B'Nisan, right? The king died in Nisan, V'Yomet Achet Hachta B'Nisan, right? And the second king also ascended the throne in his place in Nisan, then Monin Shana Lezer Ulezer, right? So we say that that year counts also for the old king because he already started reigning, that is, he already was still reigning in the month of Nisan, and the new king also began his reign in the month of Nisan. So again, the same question, Pshita, shouldn't this be obvious? So, Mahu de Tema, what if you should argue as follows? Ki amin in yomecha b'shona choshev shona, right? When we say that one day in the year can be counted as if it were a complete year, so when we say b'sof shona, that would be at the end of a year. Avol b'tchila shona le'yamrinon, but at the beginning of the year we would not argue as follows. So kamash monon, we learn therefore that it counts also. Now of course, let's analyze that. What do we mean? First of all, that one day in a year can be counted as a year. Well, obviously in this particular case we say that even if he reigned for only one day, right, and then that is if the new king, okay, the new king, if he reigns for one day, in other words, he becomes king when? On the 29th day of the month of Adar, which is the last day of that year, according to the Rosh Hashanah system that we're following now, right? And if he ascended the throne, as we said, on that day, then what do we say? As soon as the first day of Nisan comes, this is the beginning of the second year of his reign, right? That we've already established before. So we say, all right, guns good. Of course, we've already argued that, okay, before. But let's say if a king passed away at the beginning of Nisan, right, and the new king began reigning in Nisan, couldn't we say the old king didn't reign long enough in the month of Nisan in order to make it count as a year, right? You understand? I mean, let's say he died on the first day of Nisan, right? Not on the first day of Nisan. So we would say, wait, you're counting a whole year, as you say that he reigned 12 months instead of 11, 12 years instead of 11 years or something like that, right? When he only reigned 11 years and one day into the new year. So we say, no, okay, we also reject that argument too, okay? So Kamash Malon, therefore. Because the statement says that Monin Lezer Ulezer, we give each one credit for a year. Okay, yeah, that's the idea. Meis b'Adar, and what if the king died in the month of Adar, right? The Omar Achetachta b'Nisan, and the new king began reigning when? In the month of Nisan. That's when he ascended the throne. So what did we say before? Monin Rishona L'Rishon Ishniya L'Sheni, right? And we say that the first one, in other words, that the first year, that goes only to the older king, the king who died, right? Because he died in the month of Adar. So that's the end of his reign, okay? But since the new king did not begin reigning, not in Adar, but he first began reigning in Nisan, right? That's when he first ascended the throne, right? So in that particular case, you only count one year for him. So we say Pshita. So isn't that obvious? What is the objection this time? So he says the objection is as follows. He says, Leitzricha deimnu alemi ador umalach umelach ben melechu. Okay? We need it for the following argument. Granted that the old king died in the month of Adar, right? And we said that the new king did not become... They didn't ascend the throne until when? Until Nisan, correct? But nevertheless, they already had determined, Imnu, it's like they took a vote, okay? And they decided to make him king. So we could argue as follows, that since they decided to make him a king and the meeting that determined this took place in the month of Adar, so why shouldn't we say then that this king... That, in other words, that when Nisan came, so we'll count it as a second year, just as we said, before, if he had actually began reigning in the month of Adar, right? And not only that, we add one more thing. What is the other thing that we're adding? We say, Umelech ben Melechu. Hey, not only did he begin, you know, not only, let's say, did they determine that he should be king, even though he didn't ascend the throne actually until the month of Nisan, but it was an honor that they made this determination. But not only that, he's also the crown prince. His father was king, and he is now going to be the new king. So as Rashi says, I mean, in this case we have two reasons. They voted in Ador, and at the same time we would expect that his succession would be automatic, right? Because of the fact that he is the son of the previous king, right? So then why shouldn't we count, let's say, the month of Ador, the day that he began in Ador, and count that as a whole year, as if he had actually ascended the throne in Ador, right? So Mahuda Tema, why can't we argue then that we count for him Tartan Shnin, in other words 2 years, you know, the way I explained it? So Kamash Malone, so therefore the statement teaches us, that the discussions teach us that what? Nothing doing. If he didn't ascend the throne until when? The month of Nisan, right? Even though we knew in the month of Adar he was going to be king, but still, officially, we only begin counting the years of his reign from his actual, the day that he actually ascended the throne. Okay. So far, ganz gut. We've gone through this, and we've determined the fact, you know, that normally for kings, how do we count? We count from Nisan, right? That is the Rosh Hashanah. That's the beginning of a new year as far as kings are concerned. But where do we have anything in the Torah, in scriptures, in order to, shall we say, to second this, or, you know, to give some strength to the argument that we've had? I mean, so far we've only made a statement, you understand? Right, we need proof. I mean, how do we know? Is there anything in the Torah that will teach us that this is talking the way it should be? Okay? So this is what we start with now. Okay. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, Minayin Limlochim, how do we know that when it comes to kings, She'ein Monin Lahim Elam Nisan, that we begin counting only the years of the reign from Nisan? In other words, as we said, Rosh Hashanah, that is, since it is the Rosh Hashanah for kings, so the first of Nisan automatically is the beginning of a brand new year, no matter how long, you know, he reigned previously. So he says, Shanema, we have a story, we have a posuk. The posuk happens to be in connection with King Solomon when he dedicated the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? It's written in Malachim Aleph, in 1 Kings, it's written that Vayehi Bishmoinim Shona V'yaba Mio Shona. It happened in the 480th year, from the time that the exodus from Egypt, the time that the people of Israel left Egypt, and it happened to be in the fourth year, now obviously the fourth year of what? Of King Solomon's reign, right? The Chodesh Ziv. Ziv was the old name of what we call Iyar. I have to tell you, in the Bible we have either four or five different names of the old names of the year, because the names that we have, like Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, Teves, Shvat, Nisan, and so on and so forth, these are really based upon the names that the Babylonians gave to the months. And naturally, when the Jews were in Babylonian exile, they began using these particular months, okay, the names for these months. Naturally, the months were in existence beforehand, but those were not the original names. What were the original names? Well, we have a few of them mentioned. As for example, here, Chodesh Ziv, okay? The month of Ziv. Ziv, of course, means radiance, because I don't have to tell you, at this time the sun begins to to shine with great radiance, okay? Another one that we mentioned is, for example, Pesach. When does Pesach occur? The Torah tells us, B'chodesh Ha'aviv, in the month of Aviv. Now today we use the word Aviv in the sense of the spring. Okay. Because we associate, you know, Pesach as being the festival of the spring. But Aviv originally actually meant that the grain begins to fill the ears or something like that, you see. Because we have, for example, that when the plague of hail hit the Egyptians, so it's written over there that the barley, for example, was Aviv. It was, you know, at that particular point, in that
stage.
Okay, right, in that stage, okay. So at any rate, that month was called Aviv, okay? The month that we call Tishrei was called Etanim, or Esanim, if you use the Ashkenazi pronunciation, okay? And it means of the ancient ones, or the mighty ones, and so on. You know, sages connected with Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov because of all kinds of events that took place in their lifetime. And so that was the name that was given unto them, okay? And there may be one or two others. One of them is based on archaeology. Bull, right. Bull is actually the third, that is the, what we would call the month of Sivan, okay? And then there was one more that they finally were able to discover. I mean, the word was mentioned, it was the name Tzach, which means fresh. And they discovered archaeologically an inscription which bore that. So we see, you know, that that too, because Tzach by itself could be an adjective which means fresh or something like that. But actually it was also the name of the month. I think it was maybe the month of Av or something. Well, I don't remember now precisely which month it referred to, okay? Well, I know that this was a recent archaeological discovery, okay? But the other months, we just don't know, you know, what their original names were. So, getting back over here, all right, we see then that Vayehi B'Shmonim Shona, right in the 480th year since the exodus of the people of Israel from the land of Egypt, Bashonor of the East, in the fourth year, in the month of Ziv, Hua Chodesh Hasheni, and this month of Ziv is the second month, right? Loch Shlomo al Yisrael, for in Solomon's reign over Israel. All right. Now notice, we see from this what that the year, although it was the fourth year, right? But they say that the month of Ziv was what, the second month in his reign. So in other words, what would be the Rosh Hashanah, so to speak, in order to determine what was the first month according to the calendar based on his reign, would be Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Okay? So it says, Makish Malchus Shlomo L'Sis Mitzrayim. We see that the text here makes a comparison between the reign of Shlomo, right, and the exodus from Egypt. Ma Yitzias Mitzrayim Nisan, just as the exodus from Egypt is dated from what? From the month of Nisan, right? So Af Malchus Shlomo Nisan. So likewise, the reign of Shlomo is dated from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, from the month of Nisan. So now they ask the following question. They say, the Tziyas Mitzrayim Gufo Menalon Diminisim Anina. And how do we know that the exodus from Egypt actually took place in the month of Nisan? Dilma mit Tishrei Manina, maybe we should begin counting it from Tishrei instead. So he says, Lesalkadatech. How can you even imagine that? We have another pasuk which confirms this, right? Dichsir, that as is written, Vayal Aaron Akoin El Hor Hahor Al Pi Hashem, that Aaron, the high priest, climbed to Hor, to the mountain Hor, right? According to God's command, Vayom Oshom, and he died over there, Bishnasu Arboyim, in the 40th year, the Seis B'nai Yisrael, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, from the time of the Exodus, from the time that the people of Israel left the land of Egypt, Bachodesh HaChamishi, he died in the fifth month, right? The Echot LaChodesh, on the first day of the month. In other words, what would be Aaron's Yotzeit? It would be Rishchodesh Av. Rishchodesh Av. This would be his Yotzeit. Okay? Yeah. Because that's the fifth month if you count from Nisan, right? Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, right? Tammuz. Oh, okay. So that's the fifth month. Okay. Now, we also have, however, another pasuk, Uchsiv, and the following is also written. Now, that, by the way, is written towards the end of Bamidbar. Okay? The story about the death of Aaron, of course, it occurred in the 40th year of the Exodus, because, as we know, we will know after reading the Sedra this week, that something happened to the people of Israel that caused them to wander until the 40th year after they left Egypt. Okay? That's the major theme of this week's Sedra. Okay? And so after that, then we read, you know, that in the 40th year, this is when Aaron died. Okay? And then, if we take a look at the very beginning of Chumash Bamidbar, the Devarim, the beginning of the Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu gives a date and a place where he began speaking to the people of Israel. Eila Hadvarim Shadibel Moshe Bnei Yisrael, right? Bamidbar, Barova Moel Suf, and so on and so forth. And then, what was the date that he gave? Baruch Hashem. Okay. Okay, yeah. Tonight is June the 2nd, and in the year of 1999, and we are about to begin the study of Maseches Rosh Hashanah. Had a very lovely siyum last week, and Baruch Hashem, we should continue to learn and to make more siyum in the course of our lifetime, so that we should enjoy the bliss that comes with learning Torah and the bliss of the reward that the Rebbeinu Shleilim will give us for studying Torah. Okay. Little introduction, first of all. Maseches Rosh Hashanah, of course, as we understand, is the treatise that deals with Rosh Hashanah. And as we're going to see, even though it deals with Rosh Hashanah, but nevertheless, the term Rosh Hashanah itself can refer to many things. Okay. I remarked a moment ago that it was wonderful to be able to have the siyum last week on Maseches Sota, and hopefully we'll be making a siyum one of these days. We should do so in good health. The Rebbeinu Shleilim should enable us to study more Masechtas during the course of our lifetime.
Mainly
on me. Thank you. Now, we're all familiar with the fact that Rosh Hashanah is the first day of the new year. Funny thing is that the term Rosh Hashanah does not occur anywhere in the Torah itself. How does the Torah, for example, refer to the day that we celebrate as Rosh Hashanah? So the answer is, it simply says, B'chodesh Hashri, B'echod L'chodesh, right, on the seventh month, first day of the month, Bikur Kodesh Yelachem, this is to be a day of the solemn assembly for you, right? And you're not to do any kind of work, malacha, you know. And then it says, Yom Trua Yelachem. This is to be a day of Trua, which of course we translate as blowing of the shofar, okay? So, this is the way that Rosh Hashanah is referred to in the Torah. But the term Rosh Hashanah is not used. Therefore, when the term came into use, the fact of the matter is, as we see in the very first Mishnah over here, that in the concept of time, a new year can begin at various stages, depending upon what it is that we're talking about. For example, the government has a certain day for in which it makes its budget up, right? And that is the beginning of the fiscal year, okay? So that's a Rosh Hashanah for the government, okay? Of course, for us, Doomsday is the 15th day of April, by which we have to pay all our chayvos, right? And if not, we're going to have a cheshbon nefesh that we have to face together with the income tax, right? So that's one example of it. In the Mishnah, as we're going to see in a moment, they talk about different areas for Rosh Hashanah and what are the various dates. Okay, so let us begin right now with the very first Mishnah. First Mishnah begins by saying, Arba'o Rosh Hashanah Mehem. There are four Rosh Hashanahs. There are four New Year's days that are to be observed. The Yechad B'Nisan, the first day of Nisan is Rosh Hashanah Limlochim. This is the Rosh Hashanah, this is the first day of the year as far as kings are concerned, also for the Regolot and also for the festivals. We'll discuss these things in just a moment. Right now I just want to give you the comprehensive view of what the Mishnah says, and then we'll go into the various particulars, okay? Along comes the next Rosh Hashanah, B'Yechad B'Elul. The first day of the month of Elul is Rosh Hashanah L'Maaseh B'Heva, is the Rosh Hashanah as far as the tithing of cattle is concerned. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon Oimrim, however, they disagree with the Stam Mishnah, with the anonymous author of the statement that we just read, and they say that as far as the tithing of cattle is concerned, it's B'Yechad B'Tishrei. It is the first day of Tishrei, which of course is a month later than the first day of Elul. Okay? Then the Mishnah continues, B'Yechad B'Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah L'Shonim. The first day of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah as far as years are concerned. For the Shemitin, it's also as far as Shemitah is concerned. For the Yovelos, and also for the reckoning of the Yovel, the Jubilee. L'Netiyah, for planting, for the Yerokos, and for vegetables. And then finally, B'Yechad B'Shvat, on the first day of the month of Shvat, Rosh Hashanah Le'ilot. This is the Rosh Hashanah as far as trees are concerned, Kedivrei Beis Shammai, according to the opinion of Beis Shammai. But Beis Hillel Omrim, they say that it is not on the first day of Shavat, but it is B'Chamisha Osur Bo, on the 15th day of Shavat. All right, now to go into the various details of what are the different things that we were talking about. Okay. The Mishnah began by saying that the first day of Nisan is Rosh Hashanah. It is the New Year's Day as far as kings are concerned and as far as festivals are concerned. All right. So now the question is, what about kings? So the answer is that it was a custom in days of old that whenever they would have legal documents that they would indicate in the year of this and this king. Okay, and of course they gave them the month, the date, and so on, but in the year of this king. So, while Rashi in general assumes that we are talking about Malchei Yisroel, see, Limloki says, take a look at the top line of Rashi. It says, with Gilim Hoyu, they were accustomed, and those Zaman Shtor Sehem, to count the time of the various notes that they had to write. Now, of course, by notes, I mean particularly, notes of commerce, as, for example, loans, which is particularly the area in which they were interested, but it would also refer as well to, let's say, Ksuba, Ged, legal documents, okay? So, legal documents, they would be dated, Nishnos HaMelech, right? According to the years of the king, Nishonah She'amad Bo HaMelech, beginning with the year in which the king began his reign. Even as Gemara says in Gittin, it says, and why, according to the Gemara in Gittin, do they use the king's ascension, right? What year it is in the reign of the king? So the answer is Mishum Shlom Malchus. This is for the benefit that there should be peace in the kingdom. In other words, to show honor and respect to the king. Okay? The Kavu Chachomim Echa Ben Nisan. So our sages came along, says Rashi, and they set this date of the first day of Nisan, L'tchilas Shenoso, as the first day of the year. Ba'afilu Omad B'Shvat or Ba'ador, and let's say, assume that the king actually began reigning in the month of Shvat, or in the month of Ador, of course, Shvat would be 2 months prior to the beginning of Nisan, right? Ador would be only 1 month prior to the beginning of Nisan, right? But nevertheless, Kol Shnoso Mishegiyah Nisan. When Nisan arrived, then at that particular point, we say that it is a complete year that has passed. Okay? The Yatschilu Limnos, Loishon Hashniyah, and then they begin counting a second, as the second year. Okay? So, that's clear. Because, according to Rashi, it seemed to be in order to show honor to whom? To Malchus Yisrael. But, the Tosfos, if you'll take a look on the side over there where it says the Lochim, which firstly quotes Rashi, so we find that afterwards that this applies even to whom? To kings who are not Jewish. Because if you live in a non-Jewish realm, you still have to show your respect for the king, for the government, and everything else. And of course, I don't have to tell you that right until recent times, whenever Jews lived in any monarchy, they always used to say a special prayer, Hanesin Shul Amochim, right? In it, you know, they would pray for the welfare of, and then usually they would also name, for example, I have Sidurim that go back to when my parents lived in London yet, prior to the First World War. And, you see Queen Victoria, Edward, Prince of Wales, and so then a later time when it came already King George, so again, you know, it's Ganganaze. But if you take a look at old Sidurim that were published in Russia many, many years ago, even though the Tsars in Russia were primarily anti-Semitic and they encouraged pogroms and everything else, but still the Jews prayed on behalf of Nikolai Alexandrovich, and his wife, and his son who was the crown prince, and the others, and so on and so forth, because it was a mark of loyalty. So in order to show respect, therefore, even in the case of non-Jewish kings, they would date documents that way. Now I have to add one other thing, and that is that we have records of dating what they call the Seleucid era. Seleucus, S-E-L-E-U, right? Greek would be with K, in English it's, C-O-S, okay. Seleucus, he was one of Alexander's generals, Alexander the Macedon, right? Alexander the Great. When Alexander died, remember, he died a very young man, so the lands that he had conquered were divvied up among his leading generals, okay? Seleucus became the king of Syria, just as Ptolemy became the king of Egypt, okay? And then there was another guy who was the ruler back in Greece. He didn't leave any permanent record. But these two, as far as we Jews are concerned, we were constantly in a battle between the dynasty of Seleucus and the dynasty of Ptolemy. Because Eretz Yisrael was given first to one kingdom, then it was fought over and given to the other one. I mean, part of the story of Hanukkah is
given to
right.
We'll take it.
Take it. Take it. I mean, they had money.
I was going to question that.
Right.
Say, yeah,
right. Originally Eretz Yisrael, then it was divvied up, so it was made part of Ptolemy's empire. So that it was the Greek rulers in Alexandria who actually were the rulers for some time, and it was during their reign also that the Greek translation of the Torah, took place, the one that we call the Septuagint, okay? But subsequently, there was a war between Antiochus III, who happened to be a descendant of Seleucus, okay? And he beat the armies of Ptolemy, and so as part of the rewards of winning the battle, so Eretz Yisrael then became part of the Syrian Greek Empire. And of course, after Antiochus III came Antiochus IV, the good for nothing, who was responsible for all the persecution that led to the rebellion of the Hashmonaim in the days of Hanukkah and so on. So that, it plays an important part in Jewish history. Now, even though the land subsequently became under the dominion of the Romans didn't change that. from the time that Seleucus, you know, became the ruler, from that particular point they started to count, and many of the shtoros, many of the legal documents that date back actually have dating of the Seleucid period.
About 1,000 years.
Yeah, right, because it extended to the time of the Gaon. Right.
We forgot the initial story. After the Maccabees, the Maccabees didn't like the Syrian rule, Judah Maccabee went to Rome. So he went for the fire.
Yeah, not Yehuda, that was later.
So this was really good.
I mean, if you remember, we had the business in the Gemara about Hyrcanus and Aristobulus last week. Remember that the end, of Sota, we read about it, okay? How, one was inside the city, the other outside, the business with the Chazu and so on. But what happened was that they invited then the Romans to come in order to settle. Now, once the Romans came in, that's it. They never got out of it again. Right. So, it's part of the Jewish history that we find, right?
About 6 months ago, I think, in at the end of the steps.
Yeah. Okay. Then the other thing that it says, besides for kings, as Rashi has already explained, that naturally we're talking about Jewish kings, okay, as long as there was a Jewish kingdom in existence. And then it says for the Golem, for festivals, and Rashi simply says, Mefarish Begemara, we'll get around to it. But I think that we can sort of figure out what is the reference to Regolim. If you take a look in the Torah, right, what is the first festival that we find always mentioned as a festival?
Pesach,
right, okay. Of course, Shabbos, if you want, is a holiday every week, okay. But the first, what we call the Shalosh Regolim is Pesach, right? Of course, it's connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim. And then what comes after Pesach? The answer is Shavuos. That's the second. And right, and finally you have Sukkot. So it's going to bear. Grab a chair or something. Do we have any chair?
There's one way up in the over by the right.
Oh, right. Yeah. It has a bearing upon such things as Nedarim. You know what a neder is. A neder is a vow that a person makes. You make a promise that you're going to do, and of course, we are expected to keep our promises. That's why we have to be very careful with what we say, okay? Now, let's say you made a neder, took a vow, and you said, that you would do this and this, or you would abstain from this and this, right? Okay. So, the question is, to what amount of time, for example, are you obligated? If you would take a neder and say, or we have other things, as for example, in the Beis Hamikdash, if you owe, let's say, a korban for whatever it may be, and so on, when do you make it good? Or we have such a thing as, for example, we have a mitzvah called Hashavas Aveda. You lose something, right? Person loses something, then what? It's a mitzvah to return it. If you find it, it's a mitzvah to return it to him. Okay. But the question is, let's say it's difficult to identify the person. So, you have to make a public declaration. To what point and how long do you have to make public declarations about the fact that you found an article and please come and identify yourself and see if it's yours or something like that? Because, obviously, you don't simply give it to the person who says it's mine. You have to have also simonim, you have to have, identification marks so that you can prove, that you're actually the person who lost it, okay? So it also depends on how many regolim, how many festivals. Could be three, could be five, it all depends at what point the loss took place. So it's obvious then that when they say the regolim, we see that all our festivals are dated as of Pesach. And of course, what do we always say in the Kiddush? We say Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, so what is Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim? It's a remembrance of the Exodus from Egypt. Obviously, it means that Pesach, then, this is a festival, the Yetzias Mitzrayim. All right. So that takes care of the first one, the first day of Nisan, of course, and the Gemara will have other discussions upon this. Okay. Then the Gemara continues, and it said, remember, B'yechol B'yelul, Rosh Hashanah L'Vayis HaBehemah, But it's disputed by Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Omrim, Be'echa B'Tishrei. Okay, they say that's the first of Tishrei. All right. Here the important thing is not so much the machlokas as to whether it would be the first of Elul or the first of Tishrei, which would be one month, but the question is, what is at stake over here? Okay? So we have to hark back. There is in the very last perek, in the very last chapter, in Sefer Vayikra, in the Bichu Kosai, we find that the very last psukim over there deal with Masar Behema. It says, Chomasar, Bokor, Matzon, right? That whenever you tithe, whether it's cattle or sheep, Kol Asher Yavor, Tachas HaShovet, whatever goes by literally under the rod, Wasiri Yekodesh HaDeshem, the tenth one becomes holy unto the Lord. Okay? Now, Gemara afterwards explains, you know, how is it done that they have the cattle go through a pen where there's only one exit, right? And as they go through, so every tenth one was marked with like a red stick, they put a little red paint on a stick, and then they would put it on so that you'd be able to identify that this was the Asiri, this was the tenth one, and that was sacred unto Yerushalayim. Now, what do I mean by sacred? It means that it had to be eaten in Yerushalayim, okay? It didn't have to be eaten only by Kahanim, because it's written, if you ever say Ezer Mekoman, it says over there, in the last Mishnah of that Perek, right, Hamaser L'Cholotam, that the Maser Behema could be eaten by any person. It didn't have to be a Kohen, okay? But, nevertheless, it had a sanctity to it. You couldn't work it, you understand? It had to be instead consumed, okay? As a mark of thanksgiving to the Beit Shalom, that you're happy that your cattle has increased to such an extent that you have it. Okay. So, we also have another ruling that we read this year, actually we read it at the beginning of the Kriya for the second day of Shavuos. Torah says, in Parsha Re'eh, Aser te Aser, right? You are to tithe. It's called Tvuas Arecha, all the grain that comes from your seed, right? It says over there, year by year. Okay? That's the wording. Now, the fact that it says Aser te Aser, so our sages come and they give another taich. I mean, obviously, they're talking about what? Upon, you know, talking about grain, things that grow from the soil, right? That you have to give a tenth, you have to give a miser. And of course, there are various misers and trumas and so on and so forth. But we're talking about right now specifically miser, okay? Tithe. That you have to take from that. But the sages say that why does it say Aser te Aser? So the answer is because there are two maasers that they're talking about. One is Maaser Tvua, right? In other words, the tithe given from things that grow from the ground, okay, the yield of the ground. But the other one is Maaser Behema, okay, the tithe of the animals that had to be given, okay? And the rule is Bechol Shana V'Shana, every year and every year. So what is the meaning of Bechol Shana V'Shana? The answer is that a tithe has to be given in the year in which, let's say if it's grain or fruit or something, it has to be given in the year in which it grows, okay? Right. And in that year. But when a Rosh Hashanah comes, then that's already the next year. And you cannot give, let's say, from 1999 for 1998. You understand? It has to be before Shana V'Shana.
So they declare a new year so that it extends.
That's right. And the same thing, right.
Yeah. So they count from year
to that. That is correct. Right, right. Now, obviously,
counted twice. They only get counted once, either
that is correct.
For tithe or for regular usage.
The fiscal year for this is starts.
Yeah, right, exactly. it's in its own year, and that's why when Rosh Hashanah comes, and something, let's say, would grow after Rosh Hashanah, then automatically that cannot be given as a tithe for the previous year. It can only be given as a tithe in its own year. And the same thing with the Maser Behemah, with the animals too, that you cannot give a tithe except for the animals that that were born during that particular year. Of course, we're talking about the animals that were born. I'm not talking about animals that are already around for a long time. Okay?
Now, with this, there was a unity about it, and it was declared by who? By the rabbis?
Yes, the sages are the ones who determined it, right.
It was sort of publicized in some way.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Public knowledge, this was it.
Absolutely.
So that they knew what years.
Of course.
May I ask another question?
Yes.
Going back to the Pesach.
Yeah.
Because all the festivals are counted like that, is that why we count the calendar starting with Nisan?
Okay.
The importance of it.
As far as the biblical calendar, yes. The biblical calendar, as we'll discuss, it comes from the first of Nisan, okay? But we have also a different kind of a calendar. And that calendar places Rosh Hashanah when? What we call Rosh Hashanah. You understand?
Yeah.
So, obviously, that's why the Mishnah over here is saying that for each particular purpose, there's a different Rosh Hashanah, a different New Year that we're counting. All right, so now we come to the Echod B'Tishrei. Okay, the first day of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah for what? First of all, the Shanim, for years. Okay? How do we count years? Obviously, we count years, according to Rosh Hashanah. Last year was 5799, right? Next year will be 5800, and so on and so forth, right? 5760 next year. Yeah. Running ahead. I must be thinking millennium.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's Shanim, okay. But it also, it's important for another reason. In the Torah, if you remember, we have to know which is the seventh year, because that's the next thing that they talk about, Shemitah. In other words, the year of Shemitah. This is the year in which the land has to lie, of course, that's Eretz Yisrael, the land of Eretz Yisrael, has to lie fallow, not allowed to do any agricultural labor during that year, and food that grows technically becomes hefker during that year. In other words, you shouldn't make any private profit from it, but instead it should be free for everybody in order to enjoy. Okay? So, when does this occur? Of course, this is every seventh year. But you have to count years. And so, therefore, the first of Tishrei is the beginning when they begin counting years towards the Shemitah, right? And we know that the seventh year then will be that, and then after that the next one says on the Yovos, the Jubilee year. That too was counted as of Rosh Hashanah, okay? And that of course would be the 50th year after 49 years have been counted. Then the next one, the 50th year, is the Jubilee, the Yovel, right? And even though the Torah says, Vavata Mishofatura, Bechodesh Hashvi, Be'asor Lachodesh, on the 10th day of the month, the seventh month, which of course is Yom Kippur, right? But nevertheless, the actual beginning of the Yovel would begin with Rosh Hashanah of that year, and then the special shofar that is sounded in order to declare that this is the Jubilee, that was sounded on Yom Kippur. And maybe to a certain extent the fact that we still blow the shofar on Yom Kippur at the conclusion of the services is also to a certain extent tied in with the fact that we are like proclaiming a Jubilee in our relationship with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam and us, that it should be a good year, a year of blessing for all of us.
So Jubilee years faithfully observed during the first couple
of years. That already is a big problem.
Why I'm asking that is because the gap between the destruction of the first and the building of the second is exactly when you open.
Well, 70 years is not 50 years. Jubilee is 50 years.
50 years.
No.
Okay.
The Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, was destroyed, we figure, in the year 586 prior to the Common Era. Okay? question is, however, when did Cyrus proclaim the fact, you know, that that the Jews would be permitted to go back to Eretz Yisrael and to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? So we have to figure on that basis, I mean, and see when was Cyrus the king, and so, okay? So, you run already into problems of chronology. You could say that maybe it was somewhere between 15, 60 years after the Chukum Beis HaMikdash, okay. But on the other hand, if you remember, we have other prophecies that speak about 70 years, okay? Shivim Shana, okay? So perhaps what we have to do then is to say, if you take a look at Sefer Yechezkel, you know, the book of Ezekiel, there we find that he counts the destruction not from the year 586, but rather from 597, when we have the first Babylonian captivity. Jews, so some of the most important people in Yerushalayim and there was Israel, were taken already captive by the Babylonians and forced to settle in Babylonia, and among them was Yechezkel. So that many people considered, for example, that Yechoniah, who was the king at that time and who was taken into exile, he was the legitimate ruler, whereas Zedekiyahu, who then became the king and who was actually the last king of Malchus Yehuda, of the kingdom of Judah, that Zedekiyahu was sort of like an illegitimate ruler because he was a replacement that the Babylonians had put upon the throne. He was a vassal, as we would say, okay? And there were some people who felt resentment about him because they felt that he was a tool of the Babylonians, okay? Of course, the tragedy was afterwards that, you know, he was inspired to rebel against the Babylonians because he was promised that there was going to be an uprising among all the people around Eretz Yisrael, aided and abetted by Egypt, in fighting against the Babylonians, and that would include, you know, whoever was left among the Ammonites, the Moabites, etc., etc. They all promised them. And then, lo and behold, what happened? People of Israel were deserted by all the others. They all chickened out, and only Eretz Israel was left. And of course, unfortunately, after a 3-year siege, Yerushalayim was captured, Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and many, many more thousands were taken into exile. Others remained in Eretz Yisrael, but they were afraid because of all the problems that took place, particularly with the assassination of Gedaliah ben Achikam, who had been appointed the governor of Yehuda by the king of Babylonia. And when he was assassinated, a lot of people simply lost heart and they fled to Egypt. And they even slept along Yirmiyahu together with them, where he died in exile.
But
so
the second temple wasn't destroyed until
approximately the year 70.
In the common era.
So you can see there's a big gap.
A long period.
In other words, the second Beis HaMikdash was something like 450 years in existence, from the time that Cyrus gave permission and that the Jews came back and began building until the time of the
Cyrus.
How long is the first one?
They built it roughly about the year 520 or something like that. Yeah. Okay.
How long was the first one in existence? Was the first one in existence that long? As long as the second?
The first one, how long?
It's a little bit longer than the second.
Almost the same.
There's some problems there.
Right. You always have problems with chronology. You have problems with chronology. Okay, let's continue over here. All right, so now we understand what are some of these things over here, the years, the Shemitah, the Jubilees, Linatiyah, believe the Rokos, and also as far as planting, and as far as vegetables are concerned. All right, let's take a look at Rashi for a moment, what it means by this. Linatiyah says, L'minyan shnei orla. We have a rule in the Torah that says if you plant a tree and it bears fruit during the first 3 years that you know the tree is bearing fruit, we're not allowed to eat from that. And in the fourth year, they used to take it to Yerushalayim, and they would eat it over there, just as, for example, the Maaser Sheni, the second tithe, was also eaten in Yerushalayim. Okay. So the point is that Orla is a rule that applies, according to most authorities, even outside of Eretz Israel. Okay. So in order to know how old a tree is, we might forget the day that we planted it, the day that it began to take root or something like that, and so therefore it was important to give an official date, an official birthday. Okay, so okay, we'll see later that we also have another official birthday for trees mentioned, okay, and that of course is in Shvat, but right now we're talking about the fact that Orla, that rule depends upon Rosh Hashanah, so that if we see that the tree has already produced fruit, let's say prior to Rosh Hashanah, then in that particular case, when Rosh Hashanah comes, then automatically that's the beginning of the second year for the tree. Okay?
Yeah, as Rashi says,
even let's say he planted it in the month of Av, which of course is, let's say, a month or two prior. It's not the month before is Elul, but Av is the month that precedes. So let's say 6 weeks prior or something like that, right? Nevertheless, Kol Shnoso Rishono, the first year becomes complete, the Sof Elul, at the end of Elul, right? And then the Gemara is going to give the reason for all this afterwards. And how about Yerokos for vegetables? The answer is, again, it's connected with the idea of the Miser. When do you have to give every, you know, a tenth of the vegetables that grow? So it's the Maaser Yorek. She'ein tormim ma'asmin min ha'nil kotofnei Rosh Hashanah al shel achar Rosh Hashanah. So she explains, right, that you're not allowed to give either trumos or maaseros. Tumor, remember, this is something which is given to the Kohen, okay? And the amount has to be at least, normally it's at least a 50th or something like that, 2%, okay, it's given to the Kohen. And that's Kodesh, that's holy for the Kohen, okay? Then, after that, you have Maisers. What are the Maisers? Well, you have Maiser Rishon, the first tithe, which was given to Levium. Okay, and that was operative during the first six years, and then in the Shemitah, of course, there's no such thing that doesn't operate then. Okay, then you had Maaser Sheni, which during the first, second, fourth, and fifth years, you had to take to Yerushalayim and eat that tithe. Okay, and then you had the Maaser Shlishi or Maaser Oni, this was the tithe given in the third or the sixth year, and that was given to the poor people. 10% you had to give to them during that year. Okay, so again, what grows prior, what is nilkat, in other words, what is gathered in, says Rashi, prior to Rosh Hashanah goes for the old year. After Rosh Hashanah goes for the new year, and again, you can't give from the new year for the old year, or vice versa, you can't give from the old year even for the new year, because it should be Shana v'Shana, right? It has to be every single year. Okay. Alright, finally they come to the business about what? Le'ilon, for trees, right? And there we see that there's a difference of opinion between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Ve'yechah b'Shvat Rosh Hashanah le'ilon, k'divrei Beis Shammai, Beis Shammai say that the first day of Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah for trees. And Bachamish, the Beis Hillel Omrim, right, as Bachamish Asabel, and of course, who do we follow when we talk about the birthday of the trees or the new year of the trees? We follow, of course, Beis Hillel's opinion, okay? And that's why we celebrate Bachamish Asab Shvat, okay? On the 15th day of the Shvat. Of course, in more recent years, Chamish Asab became called Tu B'Shvat, okay? But it's called Tu B'Shvat because Tes Vav is the Hebrew number for you know, if you use alphabetical numbers, so that's the Hebrew number for 50. Okay. All right. And again, says Rashi, Le'ilon, he says, Le'inyan Meiser. Again, the same thing, as far as the giving of tithes are concerned. Because if you remember before, we said as far as Orlah is concerned, right, the years that you're prohibited to eat the fruit, this is based upon the first day of Tishrei. That determines it, right? But as far as Meiser is concerned, right, as far as giving the tithe, She'ein ma'asrin peiros ha'ilon she'chontu k'an mishvat al she'chontu l'achashvat. Here, if you take a look, you see that the question is, at what point do the fruits become, what shall we say, eligible for a particular year, alright? So the answer is, it's from Chanota. Chanota means that the flower has dropped from the tree, and you can see the first fruit in formation already at that point. Right? The word itself comes from Shir HaShirim, where it's written over there, Hateinu Chonto Vageha, which means the fig tree has already yielded, you know, the fruit, right, the figs. Okay. So this is the determining, and here it says that if the blossoms, you know, drop before Shvat, then in that case, that would mean that that fruit should be counted to the previous year. If it's after the beginning of Shvat, or according to Beis Hillel, after the 15th of Shvat, right, then in that particular case, it would go for the new year. Okay? And as Rashi concludes over there, should be Elam, when it comes to trees, Holech Achar Chanota, goes according to Chanota. And again, the Gemara is going to ask the question, how come they chose the month of Shvat? Why didn't they choose some other month? But I think that there was, it's fairly apparent, because in Eretz Yisrael, when you begin to see flowering of trees and so on, in the month of Shvat. Here in New England, in the month of Shvat, we maybe you still have to pull out the snow shovels, you know. But the same thing would be true in Northern Europe and so on, Eastern Europe. But in Eretz Yisrael, of course, by the time that Tu B'Shvat comes, usually the weather has already turned a little bit milder and the trees already are beginning to blossom and so on. Actually, we learned in Brochas that when you see the trees in their beautiful blossoms in the month of Nisan, this, of course, applies to Eretz Yisrael, then in that case, there's a special bracha that we make the first time that we see it. Yeah.
See it too, when the first time you see a tree, you make a bracha.
Yeah.
The very
but it really applies more to Eretz Yisrael than that's only.
Some of the more reasons you don't have that problem.
Well, it's because, you know, they're not geared to Eretz Yisrael, okay? But it's Gemara and bracha, that's one of the.
The oldest is doing more than that.
Yeah. You know, if you remember the last chapter in Brochas, it deals with all kinds of different blessings for occasions, what we call Birchos Haner.
The
others. Yeah.
I remember. I was thinking that the people of that era, those days, had to keep a pretty extensive day book.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, to keep all these dates.
This is why.
Right.
This is why they have no such a computer industry as a stuff.
Still, yeah. Want to make sure it's
there. They have to keep track of a lot of special
days. Right.
But remember, normal farmer in Israel, landowner, did not have that much land. It wasn't that difficult.
So no one may tell you what a light
is. Yeah, well, I hear it clicked, and I know that it's
all. These are planted.
But right now it should be working because I haven't
even planted one tree. You buy a bunch of trees. If you plant a tree in your home, in your backyard, then you plant one of those. Once you get used to it,
Okay. Anyway, let's continue on with the
that's a fact. Every Friday night, a baller gets to say, you saw them after. So, remind us, people, did you give all the mazer for the
Okay. Gemara begins by analyzing the Mishnah and taking it phrase by phrase, okay? So the first thing is we said that, you know, the first day of Nisan is what? Is Rosh Chodesh for Melochim, for kings. So the Gemara wants to know the Mai Hilchasa. What halacha are we learning from this particular statement in the Mishnah? So Omar Rav Chista. So Rav Chista said that Shtoros, it's in reference to the official, you know, to the notes that you write, loans, mortgages, etc., etc. Okay. Ditnan, as we've learned in one of the Mishnahs, where it says Shtorei Chov Hamukdamin Psulin VaHamuachorin Kishevin. Okay. Shtar Chov. Person comes and he lends, he borrows money, right? So naturally, what does the lender, what does the lender insist upon? He insists, you know, that you write a note, right? Right, a promissory note, in which you date, you put down the date, you say on this and this date, so and so borrowed $1,000, let's say, or something like that, okay? And there may or may not be a time when he has to repay that loan. Now remember, there was no such thing as lending money for interest. Was important, you know, people were doing it for the sake of the mitzvah, but nevertheless, they also wanted to make sure that if they performed the mitzvah, if our, you know, the lending money, if it was chesed, is what we refer to it today, but nevertheless, they want to know that eventually it's going to be repaid, okay? So they may or may not include a date by which it has to be repaid, okay? But in many cases they did. Why not? Because we have a principle, this is a Gemara that we have in Bar Metzia, for example, where it says that Stam Havo Shloshim Yom, that if we don't specify when a note has to be repaid, then it's always assumed that the money that is borrowed is for a period of 30 days. Why? Because the money, once it goes into the hand of the borrower, it's his privilege to use that money in whichever way he wants to in order to try to make a living, or so on, make an investment, buy merchandise, or whatever it is, you know, that'll help him to make a living. That's the purpose of the loan, okay? So, what did the lender sometimes require of a borrower? He required security. Right, collateral, whatever you want to call it, okay? So what is it? So normally, of course, what they would pledge would be, let's say, land, okay? Usually they would pledge land because the average person was a farmer. He owned land, okay? So at any rate, let's say that the person did not repay his loan, okay? Then in that particular case, you know, the lender had the privilege, you know, of suing him. I mean, it had to go to a Besdin. He couldn't just send the sheriff around or anything like that. He had to go before the Besdin, present the note and everything else, and then the Besdin could order the borrower, you know, to return, and if necessary, if land had to be assessed, for example, for whatever it may be, you know, then they would do so, okay? You know, in order to determine the value, what would correspond to the amount that had been borrowed, okay? But